there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on Vermont Edition. And I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Short and sweet, right to the good stuff. Thank you.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Marble, slate, granite. These are Vermont's three state rocks. And we can't forget talc, the state mineral. Rocks and minerals are very important to Vermont's economy and history, and the nation's. Slate from Slate Valley was used to build the roof of the White House in Washington, D.C. And the Jefferson Memorial is made from 353 train car loads of marble from Danby, Vermont. Vermont's geologic history is the subject of an exhibition at the Bennington Museum that opened this summer and runs through November 10th. We are joined today by the museum's curator, Jamie Franklin. His area of focus is American art of the early and mid-20th century. Jamie, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
And I should note here that the Bennington Museum is a Vermont Public underwriter. We are also joined by Ken Carlson. He's a geologist and educator from Bennington. He taught earth science at Mount Anthony Union High School in Bennington for 38 years. And this Saturday, he's going to give a special presentation at the Bennington Museum. Ken, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have both of you. And listeners, we would love to answer your questions about rocks and minerals of our region today. Maybe you're a fan of the Bennington Museum and you've seen the Vermont Rocks exhibition. You can give us a call at 800-639-2211, or you can email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Jamie, let's start with you. Where did the idea for this exhibit come about, Vermont Rocks?
Well, I have been a rock hound and a rock collector for much of my life. I as a kid, I loved rocks, picking up rocks. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, after the pandemic, but when we were still in the midst of it and getting outdoors, I have an 11-year-old son. We like to go outdoors and explore. And so rock hounding and collecting came up again. I've known Ken for a number of years. I've been here at the Bennington Museum for 19 years and knew about his interest in minerals. And just being the curator here at the Bennington Museum, I've done exhibitions on gravestones, which of course here in Vermont, depending on which part of the state you're in, are made from marble, slate, or granite. And so I understood the kind of deep historic and cultural roots of minerals and rocks here in the state. And so I figured it was a passion of mine and it was a subject of interest to Vermont history. And so I thought it would make a great exhibition.
Mm. Has your 11-year-old attended?
Oh yeah. He comes to the exhibit on a regular basis, whether he likes it or not. But he did come and see the show a couple of times and he enjoys it.
Mm. Well, my daughter's 3.5 and is in that stage where she'll just fill her pockets with these tiny little bits of gravel and asphalt as if they're treasures. And Ken, I'm sure you encountered a lot of that in your many decades as a teacher. What do you think it is about rocks, no matter how plain or sparkly they might be, that so fascinates us?
I think that the sparkle is a big factor for especially young children. They see so many different kinds of specimens, so many different kinds of colors, so many different kinds of crystals, and it's just fascinating. And to have the opportunity to go out and find some of these, even if it's the driveway, it is an experience for them.
Mm-hmm. Ken, how did you first get into rocks?
Well, I graduated from college and I had a background both in history and government and in the earth sciences, and I needed a job, and I thought, well, maybe I could teach. And so I took a teaching job here in Bennington on a temporary basis back in 1967, and it was like light bulbs going off. And the more I got into it, the more I stayed in this one place, the more activities I got involved with, and I had a real good experience being here in Bennington.
Mm. And when you moved to Vermont back in the 60s, did you know that the state had such a rich history with quarrying and mining?
No. I originally came from Massachusetts, but I did my geological work in Ohio, which is all sedimentary. And so it was a totally new experience getting to start working with metamorphic rocks, which are formed by heat and pressure.
Mm. Okay, this is ringing bells already for science classes of old for me. you brought up sedimentary rocks. What are the – well, let's start even more basic than that. What is the difference between a rock and a mineral?
Okay. A mineral is something very definite. It has its own chemical formula. It is inorganic. It's a unit by itself. And when you combine two or more minerals, you get a rock. That's the easiest idea of what it's all about. Mm. So if you have quartz has a very definite chemical formula. And so you call that a mineral. If you combine quartz with several other minerals, you'll get a rock such as granite or gabbro or one of the others. But each mineral has its own crystal shape, no matter where you go in the world.
Mm. Well, let's talk our way through Vermont's three state rocks. Vermont has the very special designation of being the only state with three state rocks. So good on us. Let's start with marble. And Jamie, what was most interesting to you when you first started digging into the history of the marble industry here in Vermont for this exhibition?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, one of my interests is early gravestone carvers in Vermont. And so marble was really one of the earliest mineral extraction industries here in the state. And we had colonial settlers coming and making what became Vermont their home as early as the 1760s. And by the 1770s and certainly into the 1780s, stone carvers who had been based in eastern New England, in Massachusetts and Connecticut, started coming to Vermont to carve our marble because we have exceptionally high quality marble. It has a small grain, which allows them to carve incredibly intricate details and very pure white marble. And so the very earliest kind of stone industry was gravestone carvers. And then the marble industry really grew throughout the 19th century and exploded when the railroad systems arrived here in Vermont and in the mid 19th century. But, you know, Vermont was, and Rutland centered around Rutland, which was the main epicenter of the Vermont marble industry, the Vermont Marble Company. Founded by the Proctors, was one of the largest multinational industries in the world by the late 19th century, employing over 5,000 people. So Vermont is the second largest marble center in the world outside of the Carrara area in Italy, where, of course, Michelangelo got his marble for David. But really, Vermont is one of the main marble centers in the world and has really been producing some of the highest quality marble in the world for really over 200 years now.
Wow. Listeners, you are rock hounds. We know you are out there. What is your fun fact about Vermont's history with rocks and minerals? Maybe you live in the Rutland area and have a family history that dates back to the time we're talking about right now. Give us a call at 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Ken, what exactly is different between the marble that you can find, the Vermont marble that we used to pull out of the ground here, and marble from Italy?
Basically the same thing. They're both made of calcite. The difference, if you're going to be a difference, there's going to be a difference between marble and limestone. Limestone forms from organic remains, perhaps at the bottom of the ocean. And when the limestone undergoes great pressures like we had here, The fossils are destroyed, and the marble is more crystalline than the limestone. But basically, the limestone in Italy and the limestone in Vermont is basically the same thing. There may be some impurities in different places, but it's basically a calcite.
Impurities, not in Vermont marble. No.
Oh, yes. Not if you get it out of Danby Mountain. Danby Mountain has an incredible operation inside the mountain, which opened, I think, around 1913 or somewhere in that vicinity. And it's now big enough so you can drive big trucks into the mountain to take out the big blocks of marble that are then distributed around the world.
Wow. Is this history of Danby Mountain covered in the exhibit at the Bennington Museum, Jamie?
It is. And as Ken said, really, there's not necessarily a difference between Italian and Vermont marble. The reason that both of them are so highly valued is because particularly the marble at Danby, like Ken said, has very few impurities, which means it's very pure white. But really, Vermont and Italy both produce lots of different types of marble. So you can find white marble with gray or green veining. You can find red marbles here in the northern part of the state. So marble comes in a lot of varieties, but the type that we're most familiar with, which is what made Vermont famous, is the really pure white kind. And like you said, the Danby Marble Quarry, which is still the only major Vermont quarry still in operation in Vermont. It's something like a mile and a half deep into the mountain and 25 acres inside of Mount Aeolus there in Danby. We have a video here by an artist, Jen Morris, in the exhibition, which shows on one half of the screen some of the underground operations of them using huge water saws to cut multi-ton blocks of marble out of the quarry there in the side of the mountain, loading them on the huge trucks underground with 10-foot wheels on them. And then on the other screen, you see the Arlington National Cemetery. Arlington National Cemetery there in Virginia, just across the river from Washington, D.C. And almost all of those stones are made from Danby marble. And so that video kind of shows the economic and metaphoric connections that we have with Vermont marble.
Wow, and that stark white of those gravestones in Arlington Cemetery, of course, a hallmark of that space. Let's go to the phones. We have a number of calls coming in. We have Gordon in Stowe up first. Gordon, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I grew up in the Chester, Londonderry area, and there's a section of Chester which was referred to as the Stone Village, where both sides of the street are nothing or primarily nothing but stone granite homes, which are very, the craftsmanship involved in making these homes by hand back in the day is quite extraordinary. And I had the fortunate opportunity to own one. I'm a builder myself. Most of the granite was quarried out around Chester. I believe it was two gentlemen that immigrated from Europe that brought the craft. And I wondered if any of your panel had any interest in or knowledge of that.
Thanks, Gordon. Ken, let's start with you. Are you familiar?
I'm not familiar with that operation. Chester is famous for several locations where you can find beautiful pyrite crystals and magnetite crystals and others also. But as far as the building structures in Chester itself, I'm assuming as the miners were digging for this rock, because it obviously wasn't going to come from very far away, they were finding these crystals, and that has been of great interest to mineral collectors around the world.
Thank you. Jamie, do you know more about this part of the state and the Chester
villages?
I know
a little bit. So in Chester, as Ken said, there are a number of different type of quarry operations. Most of the granite in Vermont comes from up in the Barry area, which is, of course, famous for its Rock of Ages quarry and many other granite quarries. But there are a number of what are known as plutons, which are granitic extrusions. And Ken can probably talk a little bit more articulately about this than I. But granite is, we talked about metamorphic rock. So marble and slate are both metamorphic. Granite is a igneous rock, and it comes up And there may very well be some granitic extrusions in the Chester area. But what I know about the houses that were built there in Chester, and you do, if you're driving through Chester, you'll see a number of stone houses there, which are pretty unique for Vermont. My understanding is actually there were stone workers that came to Chester from Scotland in the 1840s, and they brought their craftsmanship with them. And that's a larger part of Vermont's kind of mineral and rock culture and history, is that a lot of the quarries throughout the state, the marble quarries, the slate quarries, and the granite quarries, a lot of European immigrants came from Scotland, from Ireland, from Wales, from Italy. And they brought their cultures and traditions with them. And those traditions are still very much a part of the communities that they came to, whether it be Barrie or Chester or Rutland.
Let's go right back to the phone lines. We have Nathan in Essex Junction on the line. Nathan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. To the earlier conversation about the Barrie quarry mines, granite mines, sorry, my great-grandfather came over from Italy along with some of his cousins and brothers when he was a teenager and worked in the mines. And I remember hearing about that growing up and then frequently going now to see his gravestone and some of our other family's gravestones in the Hope Cemetery there, which is kind of a beautiful monument to Vermont granite and just some amazing workmanship with a lot of those gravestones.
Wow. Was your great-grandfather, Nathan, the last person in your family to work in that industry, or did others follow in his footsteps?
No one. They actually, he moved on from that and opened a restaurant in the Barrie area, and no one else in our family did, but his generation was very involved in it.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story, Nathan. We appreciate it. Frederick in Lindenville is on the line. Frederick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a geologist as well. I study geology across the lake at Skidmore College. And I was wondering if your panelists could speak a little bit about the legacy of copper mining in the state of Vermont. There are three very active copper mines in the early 1900s, the Elizabeth Mine, the Ely Mine, and the Pike Hill Mine. And I don't know if they have any knowledge of those operations.
Thanks, Frederick. Ken, talk to us about copper. What do you know?
Well, out of the Elizabethan mine, they were mining a variety called chalcopyrite. And we created a map, a geologic map of Vermont based on the Vermont map that's here in the museum. And we put a piece of the chalcopyrite from the Elizabeth mine, and we inserted it into the slabs that we used. Elizabeth mine, I believe, was in operation until the late 50s, but it then had to become a Superfund site because of a lot of leaching out of the soils and so forth in the area. But I believe it's it has been put back into a pretty good shape. But it was a big industry early on. As far as native copper, we did find a piece of native copper in the Belvedere Mountain Mine, the asbestos quarries up in Lowell Eden, but that was very rare to find pieces like that up there. We also found bornite up there. But there isn't, other than the area that you mentioned for the copper, there hasn't been much found here in Vermont.
Mm. Well, thanks for the question. And Ken, I'm glad you brought up the Belvedere mine. I mean, the NEK, it operated from the 1930s to 1993, when, of course, the harmful effects of asbestos became well known to the mainstream. Jamie, is the Belvedere asbestos mine part of the exhibit at Vermont Rocks at the Bennington Museum?
Absolutely. So the exhibition itself is kind of broken up into four sections on the four state rocks, marble, slate, and granite. And then there's a section in the middle on largely on specimens. So a specimen is an example, something often that you can hold in your hand of a particular mineral. And so at the Belvedere Mountain Quarries, which will be a large part of what Ken will be talking about in his presentation here at the museum on Saturday. So Ken will certainly be able to add to whatever I have to say. But they were actually mining asbestos, as you said, which asbestos is an industrial term for a family of minerals that have particular qualities that made them advantageous for various industrial purposes. They have very high tensile strength. They have very high insulation qualities, so they can be used, as we are familiar with today, for piping insulation, which you often have to remove if you buy an old house here in Vermont. There'll be asbestos insulation protecting your pipes in the basement. It was also used in roofing materials and other building products. And so the Belvedere Mountain Quarries were an asbestos quarry, but as is often the case, one of the side products or byproducts of the mining process was that they found incredibly beautiful crystals. And so the Vermont state gem is grossular garnet, because some of the very finest grossular garnets in the world were found at the Belvedere Mountain Quarries. And so we have a whole section of beautiful and geologically significant mineral specimens in the exhibition, including dozens of examples of crystals and minerals that came out of the Belvedere Mountain Quarries, including grossular garnet, epidote, Vesuvianite, and many others.
What does a grossular garnet look like for someone who's never seen one before?
So a grossular garnet in its kind of ideal form is known as a rhombohedral dodecahedron.
Ooh.
So rhombohedron is like a diamond shape. and a grossular garnet has, and a dodecahedron has 12 sides. So it has 12 diamond-shaped sides. And the most famous grossular garnets from Belvedere Mountain are a gorgeous kind of fiery orange or cinnamon red color.
Wow. That sounds beautiful.
They can come in many different colors from Belvedere Mountain. Green is not uncommon. They even come black and white and yellow. But the famous orange, yellowish type, deep types came out in the 1940s and 1950s. The ones that are most desirable, not to be confused with the grossulars that came out of southern Quebec, very close to where Belvedere Mountain is. There's a distinct difference in the colors between the two locations, which confuse some people sometimes. But know that the grossulars are amazing.
Why are the colors so different if you're in Vermont versus southern Quebec?
Well, it's just the environment that they formed in. There could be minute elements in one area that are not present in another area, and they can sometimes help to, like, for example, there is a black grossular found at Belvedere Mountain, and that they were found in a mineral called clinochlor, and the clinochlor gave those grossulars a black color, and it's the environment that they were formed in, and that creates some of the coloration.
Wow. For folks listening right now with access to a computer, I highly recommend you Google grossular garnets, because they are beautiful. Let's go to a couple questions we got from listeners via email. One person asks, what about quartz and gold in the Northeast Kingdom? So since we're talking Belvedere, let's stay in the NEK. Ken, is there gold in the NEK?
I have no idea, but I would expect that there is. You see,
We're going to start a panning trend.
I live down in the Bennington area, and the Northeast Kingdom is far, far away. however, the most gold that I'm aware of that has ever been found in Vermont is up in the Plymouth area. And in the 1850s and 1860s, People from the California Gold Rush came back and started looking for gold in Vermont and in the Plymouth area. They were quite successful for a few years, and they were able to find some in the seams of the rock in that area. But most of the gold that is found in Vermont comes from placer deposits, in other words, in the sand, and they have to they have to go through sluices to obtain the gold. Mm. I have friends who go out religiously to find gold, and they have found some, but then not enough to get wealthy on.
Mm. Well, if you're in Vermont and you have found gold, give us a call. I want to hear about it right now. 800-639-2211. Jamie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there is definitely quartz found in Vermont. Mm-hmm. Most of the kind of most beautiful quartz has been found actually down here on the southwestern part of the state. So there were some pretty famous finds of quartz crystals when they were building Vermont Route 7 through Dorset in the late 1980s. They found a huge pocket with some of the largest crystals. So we have a 16-inch quartz crystal here in the exhibit that was found in the Dorset find. There are other beautiful crystals of quartz up on Mount Tabor in Devil's Den, which is on national forest land. Most of these sites are no longer open to be collected by the public. I'm not familiar with too many quartz deposits up in the Northeast Kingdom, but Vermont definitely has some gorgeous examples of quartz, which are included in the exhibition.
Mm. We got an email from Craig in Underhill who says, we are on a hillside with about a foot of organic material. There's a few rocks around here that make me question their story. Are there any resources available for identification? I'd love to hear from both of our guests on this. Jamie, as a maybe more amateur rock hound than our geologist guest, Ken, how did you, what are some resources that you use to identify rocks?
Well, I'm a kind of obsessive compulsive researcher, as you might imagine, as a curator, and it's one of the reasons I love my job. And so there are a lot of different resources out there to try and identify minerals. But one of the good kind of resources here locally is to find yourself a good rock and mineral club. So the probably the best and most active club here in Vermont is the Burlington Gem and Mineral Club, which is based out of Burlington, of course. And they have monthly meetings. And a lot of times you can bring in things that you've found, and some of the club members with more knowledge can help you identify what you might have found. Other places, you know, you can also go to a geologist at a local university, whether it be Middlebury or UVM or one of the other large universities with the geology department, and they might be able to help you as well.
Mm. Ken, any thoughts from your end?
Unfortunately, UVM no longer has a geology department. Mm. They at one time had a very strong department. They had also what was called the Fleming Museum, which I don't think even exists anymore.
It does. The Fleming Museum is still open. Yes.
Is it still there? Mm-hmm. But at one time it was top notch, especially when it was on the main campus. When Trinity College closed, they moved it over there, and I'm not too familiar with how that has gone.
Hmm. Well, do you have any tips for somebody like our email writer, Craig, who is looking for resources for identification?
I would suggest possibly going online and go on Google or go to another search site, because there's a lot of information possible. There is what is called MINDAT, and which is a worldwide information source, and that's all online. And so I would suggest that as a possibility. And there are a lot of books out there that would be very, very helpful. And I would say probably that is your best bet.
Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. We have Chris on the line in Stowe. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good day. Years ago, in a really small library, I ran into a double-volume book published by Colonel So-and-so. I'm in my 70s, so that's gone. for the Vermont legislature, about 1859 is what I recall. And basically what it said was that everybody and his uncle had a little backyard mine, and there was huge exploration. You know, right here in this area, we had a lead mine that somebody built on Elmore that had $2 worth of silver in it per ton.
Wow.
We also had another copper mine. And somewhere there's not an anthracite mine, but a soft coal mine, I think down near Brandon. And the original growths are really visible.
Hmm.
Anyway, and one last interesting thing is in the Dorset Quarry across from Snow's gas station in the 40s prior to the war, they had a girls team from high school doing synchronized swimming through the ice.
Wow.
And I'll let somebody else get on it.
Wow, that's fascinating. Thanks so much, Chris. Jamie, I'm curious if you came across a history of these backyard mines when you were doing your research for the exhibit at the Bennington Museum.
Well, I think it's really important to understand that minerals have really been a huge economic source, both for Vermont, but also kind of just generally. I think, you know, nowadays with computers, you know, there's mining all over the world to get rare earth elements to help run computer chips. But back in the 18th and 19th century, minerals were also really important. So like I mentioned earlier, one of the early stone carvers, Zerubbabel Collins, moved up here from Connecticut, and he bought land and he built a farmhouse. And he bought that land because it had a marble quarry. And there were marble quarry, kind of backyard marble quarries that were active here in southwestern Vermont. People would buy them up so that they could run stone businesses. And there were other, you know, there were people looking for minerals in the 19th century because it was a very important economic driver. So there were definitely things like that happening in the 19th century, without a doubt.
Wow. Fascinating.
Down in this area, iron prospecting was very, very big, and there were a lot of blast furnaces through western Vermont, in Bennington, in Shaftesbury, in I believe there were some up in the Dorset area, and they were very prominent during the early part of the 1800s.
Hmm. Well, let's end with one last question from our email inbox. Eric in Barrie has read that there was an obsidian mine on an island on Lake Memphremagog. Roy Underhill wrote about it in his original book, The Woodwright's Shop. And Eric is wondering, does that mine still exist? Jamie, Ken, have you heard of this obsidian mine?
No, I would be surprised if there was any obsidian in Vermont. Mm. People a lot of times confuse the slag that is found from the ironworks with obsidian here. I used to have students come in with a beautiful piece of what looked like obsidian, but was actually slag from the ironworks.
Mm. Yeah, obsidian is an igneous rock when lava cools very, very quickly and forms a glass-like material. And while there was some volcanic activity in the very ancient past, there's been so much glacial erosion and other wear and tear that it's highly unlikely that you'd find obsidian in Vermont.
Mm. Well, judging by the level of interest we've gotten in this show from you, our listeners, we're going to have to return to the topic of Vermont's rocks very soon. Vermont Rocks at the Bennington Museum runs through November 10th. Curator Jamie Franklin, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
And Ken Carlson, thanks to you as well.
And thank you for having me here also.
You can attend Ken's special presentation on the Belvedere Mountain Quarries at 2 p.m. this Saturday at the Bennington Museum.